You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of the program. 7:06 on a Wednesday morning. I am Brian Noonan. Jamie will be back with us next Monday. Frank is here. Parker's here. You are here. And that's what's important. And as we do at the beginning of every hour, it's time for a little you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Well, if you remember yesterday, we talked about the president floating the idea of getting rid of the federal gas tax for a little while, and we talked about how it was about 18 and a half cents, and was that ever going to really make a difference to anybody? And the president said, well, you know, money's money, which is true, and we figured it would just skate through. Well, that's not really the case. Congressional leaders are pumping the brakes on the president's plan to suspend the federal gasoline tax. They're wary of taking a political gamble with relatively little payoff for Americans at the pump. So where does the gamble come from, and why are we not going to really be affected? Well, I told you, 18 cents a gallon is not going to make that big a deal when gas is at $5. Republicans and Democrats alike, though, are agreeing on this. They said yesterday that they're open to the idea of temporarily lifting the 18 cent per gallon tax and that they'll discuss the possibility over coming days. But at the same time, one day after Trump's call to action, more than 2 months into the Middle East war that's caused these prices for fuel, both gasoline, diesel, everything, to shoot way up, congressional leaders were not throwing any weight behind legislative proposals. They're preferring instead to wait and see whether Trump will make a more direct appeal to Congress, which, as far as it goes, he needs to. He can't unilaterally decide. Not that that has stopped him before, but he cannot unilaterally decide. I'm sorry. My tongue is not cooperating with me this morning. And that's a sentence you probably don't usually hear from people, but it's true. So anyway, they're going to wait and see. Because like I said, he can't just decide to drop the tax. He needs congressional approval for that. So Mike Johnson, the man who is usually bends over backwards to do exactly what Donald Trump said, came out yesterday and said that it is certainly an intriguing idea, which is corporate speak for, yeah, we'll not be doing that. But hey, interesting idea. No stupid questions. Yes. So Mike Johnson said, like I said, an intriguing idea, but that Republicans have to wait to assess and consider potential unintended consequences before they move forward with the bill. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise from Louisiana, he helped set the chamber's calendar, did not promise a vote on the issue. So on Monday, leaders were said to be discussing how to proceed, according to people familiar with the discussions who were granted anonymity to speak candidly. Now, the trepidation for now to lift the federal gasoline tax underscores what Republican leaders are worried about directly confronting the Iran war's impacts and marks the latest flashpoint in Congress's broader efforts to address energy affordability. That's one of the biggest issues that is framing the midterms. Republican and Democratic lawmakers have pitched bills to temporarily suspend the gasoline tax. Many of their colleagues have questioned whether it would make much of a difference. I don't believe so. I'm wondering how you would feel about that. It is not. Further complicating the gas tax holiday's path forward are concerns about the beleaguered Highway Trust Fund. That is what is paid for mostly by the gasoline tax. Now, pending gasoline tax holiday legislation would make up the difference with general fund dollars for the highway fund, but it would likely encounter resistance from fiscal Republicans who are worried about the deficit. Yes. So it sounded really good in the short term. And anytime we hear, oh, we're going to cut a tax, we get all excited, don't we? Yeah, oh, that'll be great. I don't have to pay a tax. So gasoline's going to be what, $2.95 again? No, it's still going to be way over $4. It still may actually be over $5 in some places, but it'll be 18 cents cheaper. 18 cents. Now, Parker, I'm old enough to remember when if I had 18 cents when I was a kid, mm-hmm. I could walk up to Ben Franklin and get 18 pieces of penny candy. You know what I can get with 18 cents now? Bubkis. Nada. Zero. Yeah. Nothing. Nothing.
Not
nothing.
Much.
Nothing. I can't even pay a toll with 18 cents. I can't go to a lemonade stand on the corner with some young child. Not that I would take a young child to a lemonade stand, but, you know, a lemonade stand being run by a young child and buy a cooling beverage for 18 cents. Can't do it. 18 cents means nothing.
It's true.
And
I charged a dollar.
Again, short. Yeah, I don't even know what a kid at a lemonade stand charges anymore. I know we used to charge 5 cents. And then we upped it as I got a little
back
older.
Back in my
25
day, it was only
cents.
A nickel.
It was only a nickel. And two kids would man the stand, and another would ride around the neighborhood just screaming from his bike, lemonade, 5 cents, lemonade, 5 cents. It was an idyllic time,
that's,
Parker.
That's good advertising.
It is. Listen, none of us had degrees. We didn't know target marketing. We didn't know our demo. We didn't care. We didn't have social media. That was social media. Riding around the neighborhood screaming was our version of social media. All right, what else do we need to know? Well, here's more good news, friends. For the first time in 3 years, American wages are no longer outpacing inflation. Oh, I mistook that as good news. It's not. Prices rose 0.6% on a monthly basis, driving the annual rate to 3.8%. That's the highest inflation rate since May of 2023, according to the latest Consumer Price Index data that was released yesterday by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Economists had expected prices to rise 0.6% from March for the annual rate to climb to 3.7, but we went a little higher. So prior to the late February U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran, inflation had increased 2.4%. It leaped higher in March, and now the energy price shock from the Iran war is further compounding long-standing affordability concerns for Americans weighed down by years of fast-rising prices. According to an economics professor at Loyola Marymount University, for consumers, that means the cost of living remains uncomfortable. For the Federal Reserve, it means rate cuts are likely to be pushed in the future. So the post-pandemic inflationary burst was the annual pace of price hikes. That's when we hit a four-decade high of 9.1 in the summer of 2022. It drastically lifted all prices. Now, in recent years, as inflation slowed, some Americans were able to get a leg up as their pay was rising faster than inflation. Well, that changed last month. As I mentioned, annual inflation adjusted average hourly wage growth went negative. For the first time since April 2023, paychecks grew 3.6% from April of last year on average. Prices rose 3.8%. So you're working hard, but you cannot keep up. You cannot do it. Lynn, we were talking about the gas prices. Lynn remembers paying 45 cents a gallon back in her day, and she adds the laughing emoji. As late as 1999, Parker, it was under a dollar. Gas was under a dollar when we moved to California, where gas is notoriously high. I was getting gas at the Gas King for 99 cents a gallon.
I don't know.
That wasn't that long ago.
I don't know what the lowest gas price I've ever seen is. Probably not below $2.
Yeah, and I don't remember. Like, when I was a kid, I didn't worry about gas prices because I wasn't driving.
That's true.
When I started driving, it was still way under a buck.
Wow.
You know, you could fill the car for under $10.
Wow. That's not what I did the other day.
Cruising around with your lady or your man or yourself if you had no friends. What else do we need to know? There is stuff you need to know. This is closer to home again. 2/3 of election clerks said they experienced problems getting mailed absentee ballots back for last month's election. That's according to a survey of more than 900 clerks by the Wisconsin Election Commission. Most clerks surveyed said they believed ballots were received within 3 to 5 days, the standard time frame for first-class mail, but a substantial number of others said it took ballots 7 days or more to reach the clerk's office after the voter mailed them. A clerk in Fond du Lac County said some ballots postmarked on March 23rd or 24th didn't arrive until after Election Day on April 7th and could not be counted. So when a local post office was questioned why, staff there said it was because of a blizzard. Okay. Well, we'll see. According to the clerk from Fond du Lac County, she said, "We had voters that paid additional postage to get their ballots to the municipal clerks, and sadly, they arrived after April 7th. I do not want to see extended deadlines, meaning mailed ballots can arrive after the election and be counted, because I truly feel we will see the same issues and voters that will procrastinate. We work so hard at the front end to get the ballots to the voter and then have them come back after Election Day is very frustrating." Yes. Now, for major elections, Postal Service authorizes extraordinary measures, such as overtime for postal workers. In the November 2020 election, for example, nearly all of the ballots were set and were sent. They were delivered to clerks within a week of voters putting them in the mail. 97.9% of them arrived within 3 days. Now, the other delays are caused in part by how the Postal Service sorts and processes mail. Wisconsin is served by three regional processing centers. One is in Oak Creek, which is south of Milwaukee, Green Bay, and St. Paul, Minnesota. So that means if you, Parker, are here in Madison and you take your absentee ballot to the post office and drop it off, well, that Madison ballot goes from Madison to Milwaukee, then comes back to Madison's clerk office. And a ballot from a voter in La Crosse, Eau Claire, and Superior leaves the state before it returns. That makes a zero sense.
That's what I would call silly.
That is very silly. It's almost like Jamie's flight this week. I'm going to have to go to Rochester to fly to Minnesota, to fly back to Rochester, to drive to Minnesota, to then fly to Boston. Makes no sense. So our mail shouldn't be the same. The handling of absentee ballots has been contentious. We talked about this the other day, where some of the 23 ballots here in Madison got to the clerk's office minutes after the 8 o'clock deadline. Minutes. That's ridiculous. It's crazy. But it's the way things are. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. But it doesn't. If mail is going from Madison to Madison, it should just stay in Madison. Mail doesn't want to go see Milwaukee. Mail doesn't care. And if you're sorting it, I would think, and again, I'm not a postal worker. I would welcome feedback from postal workers to set me straight if I'm way off the beam. But I would think that if you're sorting it anyway, if you're in a city that the mail is going to, can it just pull that mail out by itself? Why does it have to go somewhere else? Do we have to always? Because I'm guessing before the changes, if you mailed something in Madison, it didn't have to go somewhere else to get sorted. They would just sort it right here. But probably cutbacks and automation and trying to streamline the process made it so that we now have to do things a much more difficult way. So we'll keep arguing about this. Every election, there'll be a problem. Mark at Prairie du Sac points out that Lucy gave psychological advice for 5 cents, Parker. That was back in my day, too.
5 cents?
You go see the doctor. Yeah. The doctor is in, 5 cents.
Yeah.
But you had to pay first. She didn't do credit.
Oh, she doesn't. Mm.
She didn't bill insurance. It was a private pay.
I don't know if I trust her to be given good advice.
Well, it's not just the cost that would make you not trust her, or the fact that she doesn't bill insurance. It's the fact that she's Lucy, and she gaslights Charlie Brown all the time.
See, there's a problem.
She was constantly pulling that football out. So if she's willing to do that on a regular basis, what kind of advice do you think she's giving you?
Well, what does that say about Charlie Brown, though?
Well, Charlie Brown was a numbskull.
Mm.
Kind-hearted, big-hearted kid.
He's a good
but
man.
A numbskull nonetheless. I almost said speaking of numbskulls, but that would have been rude. We are not. So we're going to talk a little pop culture. Swipe or stay next. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. It is the Swipe or Stay. I find it very hard to not look at entertainment and pop culture headlines when I'm researching the show, but I do not because I love when Frank comes in and gets very upset when we don't pick his stories. So I don't
get upset.
What this, You seem sometimes you're frustrated.
You guys did not pick the story yesterday. Parker, I'm going to exclude you from this. Well, Zombers yeah, was in.
This is true.
And you guys didn't pick the story yesterday about the sitcom house that was renovated
right.
and turned into a walkthrough.
Because I knew it was the Brady Bunch house.
Cool. It was the Brady Bunch house.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, Frank, let's play the game. Let's see what we got today. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's play it. Parker, welcome back.
Good to be back.
The name of the game. It's called Swipe or Stay. I'm going to read some vague pop culture headlines, and Parker and Brian are going to have to decide whether to stay or to swipe on to the next story. So let's get started with number one. British rock star makes headlines for congratulating the king.
Oh, I saw the picture. I didn't read the story. I'm going to stay.
You didn't read the story?
I did not.
Okay.
Nope, I didn't read the story.
I don't know anything about this. Stay.
Oh, Brian, you're going to love this story. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to preface this with what is audio, and I implore you all to go look for it. However, for the radio audience, it wouldn't translate well enough because it's so hard to hear. So it wouldn't be doing anybody any good. So, Sir Rod Stewart is making the rounds today in entertainment news, this time for congratulating King Charles on his trip to our lovely country. Monday's 50th anniversary celebration for the King's Trust at London's Royal Albert Hall, Rod Stewart congratulated the King and his Queen by saying, "May I say, well done in the Americas. You were superb, absolutely superb. Put that little rat bag in his place." Those are not my words. That is the actual quote from Rod Stewart to King Charles at Royal Albert Hall.
Who was he talking about?
He doesn't come out and say exactly who it was.
I think everybody in
our audience is smart enough to piece that one together.
Yeah.
Who he could be talking about. Yeah. Put that little rat bag in his place is one of the greatest quotes that will go down in history.
But then the weird part was after he said that, he looked at Camille and said, "Do you think I'm sexy?"
Good about it.
That's a song, just in case.
Okay.
That's one of Rod Stewart's biggest hits.
Okay.
If you want my body and you think I'm sexy, come on.
Okay. Yes. No. All right. Enough singing from these two morons. All right, story number two, Dancing with the Stars adds a non-traditional celebrity to the lineup.
Swipe,
I don't care.
Oh my God.
See?
You guys are killing me.
See? His feelings get hurt when we swipe.
No, my feelings aren't hurt, but I think you two made a grave mistake, but I'll come back to it in the secret show.
See, this is what happens when we swipe. We get to hear it anyway later. It's fine.
Wisconsin sports owner, target of blackmail scheme.
Well, we talked about this yesterday in Stuff You Need to Know.
Yeah, I'm a swipe.
We did the whole story.
Hollywood director becomes travel companion to scout filming locations.
Oh, all right. We'll stay. Can we swipe two in a row? I don't want to swipe the whole day.
No, it's okay. You don't like my stories, Brian.
No, I do.
I'm worried
we talked about that story for 10 minutes yesterday.
But Parker didn't get to. I felt bad for Parker.
Was it yesterday?
Parker should take the day off. Oh. He wants to hear all the stories. You know what he can do, Frank? He can go to Spotify and listen to the podcast.
There you go. Plug it.
Oh, yeah. What a plug. Maybe you're listening on Spotify right now. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe you are. All right, Frank, who's the Hollywood director?
Hollywood director becomes travel companion. Now, guys, I know this is a weird headline. And if I was writing for a newspaper, I don't think this headline would fly.
Okay.
But you know who is flying? Hollywood director Brett Ratner. Where is he flying, boys? On Air Force One.
Is he going to China with the president?
He is flying to China with the president.
I see.
And he will be scouting filming locations for Rush Hour 4.
Wow.
Because 3 wasn't good enough.
Because 1 wasn't enough.
Hold on. Here's what I'll say. I hate Brett Ratner. And I don't think we need a Rush Hour 4.
For a myriad of reasons.
Rush Hour 1 and Rush Hour 2 were good movies.
Never saw them.
Nothing.
I don't think I saw either.
Okay.
No interest. Chris Tucker, Jackie Chan, right?
Yeah, they were both funny in it. I don't think we need a fourth.
Is that the one?
One?
Is this the word? Do you understand the words coming out of my mouth?
Yes.
So I know that. I know that
which,
line. That's it.
I'm going to be honest. Don't worry. Some of the jokes didn't age well.
Yeah. Did they give a reason why he's flying with the president?
The president is doing business over there.
Yeah, he's going to China.
Well, let me tell you.
Zuckerberg and Musk, too.
Here's what I'll say. This will be Ratner's first narrative feature since he was accused of sexual harassment and misconduct.
Ooh.
In 2017. He's admitted no wrongdoing, of course.
Of course.
What was the last project Brett and Ratner executed?
Charlie's Angels? No, that was McGee. The Melania movie?
The Melania movie.
Ah, another
the
piece
Melania
of the
movie.
Puzzle.
That's why Brett Ratner is back on Air Force One.
All right.
Hitching a ride to China, scouting some filming locations for Rush Hour 4. The movie that, you know what? America may be down right now. We may be facing some affordability crises.
That's all made up, Frank.
But you know what will help us? Rush Hour 4.
Rush Hour 4.
Hey, you never know. It's the weirdest things that bring us together.
Well, Parker, to your point, that is it would be very weird if that brought us together. Because, as Frank mentioned, a lot of those jokes don't fly today, so I don't know how they're going to clean it up. And isn't Jackie Chan like 106? No shade on Jackie Chan, but...
He's old.
He's old.
He's and older Chris, than you think he is.
Yes, and Chris Tucker is not the young, energetic actor comedian that he used to be.
One quick thing, Brian. We've got 30 seconds. Donald Gibb, who was Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, also passed away overnight. 71 years old.
Pour one out for Ogre. That's sad. Thank you, Frank. That was a very scintillating edition of Swiper's Day. When we come back, the Attorney General has dire warnings for the media. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Glad you're here. I want to hear from you at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. In general, are you worried about the state of the First Amendment when it comes to the media? I'll tell you why I'm wondering that, and you can tell me why you are or not. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You know that this administration has a bee in its bonnet regarding the news media. They want the news media to be completely fawning over them at all times, never to question anything that they do, never to question in the most recent history anything about the war. If you question the war, you are labeled as unpatriotic. If you are a reporter and ask questions, you are subject to not only insults to you personally. The president called two female reporters stupid the other day. He's used other names like that. He called a reporter fatty, if you remember that, on the plane. Or was it piggy? Either way.
Quiet piggy was the phrase.
It was piggy. Isn't it sad that I was trying to make it nicer than it was with fatty, which still would have been wildly, wildly inappropriate?
Yeah. It's sad that you couldn't remember exactly what he said because there's been so many of those thrown around.
Right. It has been nonstop. And we have also seen lawsuits against media companies, most of whom have capitulated, some of whom who have fought back. Well, now, if you remember the story just recently about Kash Patel and allegations about his drinking on the job and that kind of thing, then there was going to be a lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal. And there was going to be a lawsuit against the Journal again because of its coverage of the war. Well, Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche said yesterday that members of the media, quote unquote, should not be surprised if they receive subpoenas for information related to their sources on stories pertaining to national security sensitive matters. That follows the Wall Street Journal report on stuff that they wrote about the Iran war, and them receiving subpoenas. Blanche said, prosecuting leakers who share our nation's secrets with reporters, in turn risking our national security and the lives of our soldiers, is a priority for this administration. However, they don't care about Russia giving Iran our troop locations. That's okay. we're not going to cut ties with them. We're actually going to ease up on some of our sanctions against Russia because, well, you know, Putin and all. So it's okay that our troops are not safe because of some relationship that the president has with Russia. But if a journalist gets a story, they could be subpoenaed. Now, let's be honest. We've seen reporters taken into court before, and reporters who are ethical, and I'm going to guess that most reporters that work for these organizations like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Wisconsin State Journal, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, we've talked to a lot of reporters from all over. They have the ethics to stand behind their sources, and they will protect their sources. Sometimes that means some of these reporters in the past have had to go to jail for a while for being in contempt because they would not reveal their sources. But that's how you get a story. That's how things come to light that the administration, not only this one, but administrations in the past, that's how we see what's really going on. The Attorney General went on to say, any witness, whether a reporter or otherwise, who has information about these criminals should not be surprised if they receive a subpoena about the illegal leaking of classified material. The Wall Street Journal reported Monday that they had received subpoenas back in March related to a February 23rd article that reported on military officials warning to President Donald Trump of the risks of carrying out military action against Iran. I don't see why that would be a problem. He still went ahead and did it. So isn't it our right to know that the military had told him no? Now, does that make him look bad? Sure. Could that be the motivation for this? I'll let you decide. You're smart enough to know. But just remember, the DOJ has been used to weaponized against other political rivals, perceived and or real. So would it be out of the realm of possibility to say that any press coverage that makes the president look bad, they will say there is a leaker? We've always heard that. There have always been, throughout the history of journalism, confidential sources. One of the most famous being Deep Throat. Parker, you're too young to remember Watergate, but that was the big thing. Woodward and Bernstein, the reporters. Deep Throat. You maybe saw it in a history book. Maybe you saw the fine movie with Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman. I don't know what your viewing habits are.
I have seen that. I watched it in
class. Have you?
Yeah, I watched it in a class. Yeah.
Wait a minute. We found a movie that Parker watched.
I know. Isn't that incredible?
That's very cool. Yeah. Well, very good. So Trump, according to the Journal, later personally urged Blanche to more aggressively pursue leaks related to the war, at one point sliding him a list of articles with a sticky note that read, treason. So let's stop pretending that we are worried about national security. Let's stop pretending that we are worried about military lives, when again, the Russia thing didn't matter. Let's call this what it is, another example of the weaponization of the Department of Justice against people who are critical of this administration. I want reporters. For how many years during the first term, and always, are we always pushing, and even during the Biden administration, how often are we calling for journalists to stop softball questioning these leaders and to really push back? And I know, in reality, they have to be careful how they push back because access can be taken away. And you do need access to get those questions answered, but it is also your responsibility, and a lot of reporters do take that responsibility seriously, to call people out. Well, other administrations may not have liked it, but they did put up with it. And whether they answered straightforwardly or kind of spun things a little bit, at least they didn't turn the Department of Justice into their own club to bludgeon journalists into silence. So he had previously, a Justice Department spokesman, said to ABC News in a statement, in all circumstances, the Department of Justice follows the facts and applies the law to identify those committing crimes against the United States. Let's just look at the James Comey case and say that's probably not completely true. Blanche previously had said in a news conference that the DOJ would be moving forward with directly targeting reporters with subpoenas, alarming media outlets and First Amendment advocates who have noted the move is a break with recent precedent. The DOJ, under the Biden administration, had previously implemented strict guidelines for when prosecutors could use compulsory legal action to target reporters, framing such moves as the last resort when U.S. national security is imperiled. Then Attorney General Pam Bondi rescinded those guidelines last year. It should make all of us nervous. It makes me nervous. It should make everybody in the media nervous. Anybody who works for a news organization, I'm sure, is already nervous and has lawyers on standby to fight any sort of legal action by this administration. But it should make you nervous too. And it doesn't matter if you think, oh, well, I do think a lot of news is slanted, and I do think there's some misinformation out there. Okay, that's fair. Because for a long time when I was younger, I didn't actually think that I thought the news was the news because I would watch the network guys. And it wasn't until cable news came along that bias started to be a little more prominent when you were watching a news network. If you watched MSNBC and you paid attention, you went, okay, things are leaning a little more left. If you watched Fox, you didn't have to pay that much attention. It was very clear where Fox stood, that they were hardcore conservative right wing and, you know, love to fearmonger. Now, do left wing media, do they, we like to, you know, or they like to fearmonger a little bit? Yes. But I don't think it's nearly on the same level. But that, all of that being said, yes, you can doubt the veracity of some media. But you also have to look at the institutions that you grew up with that have been reporting the news for decades, if not over a century, and say, okay, these people who go into this, they are dedicated to the truth. They are dedicated to the facts. They are dedicated to the fact that a light needs to be shown on people of power, and we have to know what's going on. Does that mean it's okay if somebody steals secrets? No. But if somebody leaks to a reporter, hey, you know, the military all told him that the war was a bad idea, that's not national security. That's not going to affect the outcome of the war. Could it theoretically make someone in the military go, oh, then why are we doing this? Sure. But we also know that people in the military are going to follow orders unless they are illegal orders. Chris texts in from Waterloo. He says, so are they going to subpoena Hegseth for Signalgate? Oh, well, Chris, that's a fair question, but that would mean holding everybody equal under the law and under their decision to weaponize the DOJ. And I think you know the answer to that, Chris. So thank you for raising it, though, because, yeah, it is. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. There's been leaks. There have been contradictory statements. There's been all of that stuff coming up. But I am I'm worried, and I urge places like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the Washington Post and USA Today, Gannett, which is the parent company of the Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin State Journal, to stand your ground. Call these people out. Tell the truth. Report the truth with as little spin and bias as possible. Just, we want to know what's going on, and we want to see that the entire press pool is not being duped by all the gaslighting that's going on. It's really not that much to ask, but it is, in this climate, it is a lot to ask. Mark says, Tom Blanche, because he was Trump's personal attorney, likely knows all of Trump's crimes, including his assaults on young girls. That's alleged. Should be asked every time he flips his lips what he knows. He's also likely aware of Trump's monetizing of national security information in the Mar-a-Lago investigation. There's a lot. Listen, there's not a closet big enough for all of Donald Trump's skeletons. They are myriad, and we would love to get into them. But, you know, until there's somebody else in power, until there's a different attorney general, until there's a different Congress, a lot of this, no one will be held accountable. So we just have to count on our journalists to be the ones who account for or who make at least us aware of who should be accountable and what they should be accountable for. We have some good news. Some good news. Everybody, when you were in school, you loved recess, correct? Maybe your kids don't have as much recess as they used to. New guidance has come out for recess. It's the first time in over a decade. We'll talk about that when we come back. And we'll talk about so much more. Why not? Because this is Daybreak. I am Brian Noonan. And this, my friends, is the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
I know I'm supposed to start talking, but I like this song, so I was letting it go for a couple more notes.
That's fair.
It's not slacking. No. It's just digging the groove, brother. Yes, this is Daybreak. Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are with us. What was your favorite activity at recess when you were in school? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Because we all love recess. And in this day and age, a lot of places, a lot of schools, and a lot of school districts have cut back on recess. Because, you know, there's so much that the kids have to learn, and there's only so many hours in the school day, so we don't have time for long recesses. I remember we used to get a half hour for recess. Now, especially at the school I was at, there was 40 minutes. That was lunch and recess combined. So you got to eat for 20 minutes, and then you went outside for 20 minutes. And it wasn't even a playground for most of the time I was there. It was just a parking lot, which is how... At my school, that was how we had recess too, because I went to a private school. We didn't have anything. We had the blacktop. And yet we would still play kill the guy with the football. We would play tackle football on the blacktop, because why not? You're a kid and you're dumb and you don't care. You don't care. You think you're not going to get hurt. We would go in after recess, sweaty, sometimes bloody, and the nuns would just be like, sit down, shut up, it's time for math. Yes, sister. So that was basically it. Well, it is not. Research has found that free play and recess are not just a nice break for kids in grade school. It is crucial to good health and good grades for kids of all ages. Now, that was the biggest, like when I remember the fifth graders, when they were getting ready to leave our school and go to middle school. One of their biggest fears was that they weren't getting recess anymore, because in middle school, you didn't get to go out and play for 20 minutes. And these kids were like, what are we going to do for recess? There is no recess in middle school. You eat lunch and then you go back. Mr. Noonan, whatever. Like, hey, man, you guys, by the time they were in fifth grade, every recess was like West Side Story. The Sharks and the Jets would get out there, and whether it was in volleyball or foursquare or football, it would always devolve into some sort of gang war. So I was like, and not literal gangs, but, you know, the fights and crying and drama, and there would be, recess was awful. But it did give the kids a chance to blow off some steam, so that's fine. So according to leading pediatricians groups, who just released new guidance for the first time in 13 years about the importance of unstructured time at school and how it needs to be protected. The updated policy statement by the American Academy of Pediatrics comes after years of shrinking recesses and worsening children's health. Now, the group has always supported play, free play for kids, but it's been increasingly threatened over time, partly by the drive for higher test scores. According to a lead author of the study, it has a very powerful benefit if used to the fullest. The new guidance is similar to previous policy statement, but cites the latest research on why these breaks are essential for kids. For example, and if your kids are in school, how long a recess do they get? because I'll tell you, when you have kids from kindergarten up at least through fifth grade and probably through eighth grade, you need that break. They need to get out of their desk and jump around. So, new evidence shows that kids need pauses between concentrated bouts of learning so the brain can hold more of the information. We used to do brain breaks. So after like reading, before we went into math, we would do a brain break and we would play a video from, there were different YouTube channels. Go Noodle was a big one where the kids could either have something educational or just an exercise, or they do a little dance, and it was crazy. There was one character on these Go Noodles that really, really bothered me. He was like, I don't know what he was. He was a blue guy in a white suit, and he had a really bad South American accent, and he was always having the kids do some sort of dance, and I was like, I don't like these. So I didn't use those ones very much. Anyway, so they stress the importance of physical activity in preventing obesity, a condition that now affects about 1 in 5 U.S. children. So they recommended that recess be protected and never withheld for academic or punitive reasons, which came into vogue about my last couple years of teaching, where it was like, you can't take away recess because that used to be the punishment. So it got to, well, you can hold them out of recess for like 5 minutes to try to send a message, but they have to get out for some point and run around. So that was fine. Ideally, studies show kids should get a minimum of 20 minutes a day and multiple breaks. In other countries such as Denmark, Japan, and the UK, students get breaks after every 45 minutes to 50 minutes of classroom instruction. Parker, I would like to institute recess on this program. I'm going to take a 15-minute break after every 45 minutes of content. Well, so basically, the show every hour is going to end at 45.
Okay.
And restart at after the news at the top.
Sure.
And then I will come back and I will work very hard.
Oh, yeah.
For up until my break time, and then I'll go on recess.
Okay.
I'll do a brain break.
I would say
the show behind the show, you can watch me do jumping jacks or a dance or something.
Okay.
So that's what I'll be doing during the last segment.
I would say talk to Frank about that. Not 100% sure that's going to work. But
all right,
we'll see what we can do. I would love to get
I'm
some
gonna
Foursquare
run it up the
going.
Flagpole. See who salutes.
Yeah,
I gotta have my break.
Foursquare here.
Parker, I need my mental clarity.
I know you do.
You know I need mental clarity. You know what else I need? Well, I need to talk for another minute
because
we've got things to do. I missed playing Foursquare.
Oh,
I'll tell you this. So there was one kid, and I've known him since he was in kindergarten.
Sure.
So the last year I was teaching, he was in third grade, and he loved to play football. And I was doing a long-term fill-in for the gym teacher, the PE teacher. I'm sorry, they hate to be called gym teachers, the physical education teacher. And he would throw the football with this kid every day at recess. I hadn't thrown a football in a long time when I took over this long-term position.
Sure.
First day, I was throwing it with a baseball motion and it was bouncing off the ground. And he actually came up to me and said, "Mr. Noonan, have you ever thrown a football before?"
Oh.
So the next day I went home and I was studying the motion. The next day I was drilling him with passes and he was like, "You can't throw a football." That's right. And I can also throw it a break because it's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.